nothing, so that's good. So I can. Well, to say we are living in interesting times is an understatement. When you think about how suddenly events have taken place, I think about how quickly we were ready to get out, and then all of a sudden, the past week and a half, how quickly we were ready to get back in and stay inside. I know I keep coming back to this word, suddenly, how quickly things took place. I remember vividly working on the Bible study on Thursday morning on March 12th, getting ready for here in Munster, and by the afternoon, almost all sporting events immediately shut down, ended their seasons, no services for the next 2 weeks, and then I think we're on week 13 now of no services, and so how quickly it began. If I wouldn't have been working on my Bible study, I know if I'd been working on webcasting, other things, preparing, I had just unbelievable in my mind. I never would have thought how quickly it took place. And in the last week and a half, riots, protests, tearing apart cities all around us, suddenly, quickly these things took place. What does the Bible instruct of sudden times? First, specific, well, it's kind of humorous. I was going to use it for the pastor's update and the letter for the Sabbath. And then I started digging into it more, and I'm like, I think this is the sermon. And so we're going to look at this afternoon, this topic. The title of this sermon is Living in Sudden Times. Living in Sudden Times. How do we live in times of sudden times? Sudden terror, as we'll see the scripture mention. Turn over to Proverbs chapter 3. Maybe not where you think we would turn. Talk about some prophetic events in Proverbs. That's just kind of the nice little verses about riches, goods. But there's a lot in the book of Proverbs. Proverbs chapter 3. This was the verse I was going to put in the pastor's update yesterday. I'm usually thinking on it on Wednesday and Thursday, and this is when I think I read. Well, it would have been the third of the month, so it would have been Tuesday or Wednesday. And I usually will screenshot it and think about it later through the week, and so I went back to it. Proverbs 3, verse 25. Do not be afraid of sudden terror, nor of trouble from the wicked when it comes. For the Lord will be your confidence and will keep your foot from being caught. It's a simple two verses, but it's really interesting how much is before and after this section that really does tell us how do we live during those times of how quick something takes place. And we see in these two verses very quickly. But ultimately, in verses 19 through verse 35, there's seven reminders, or at least as I went through it, studying it. There may be more, as we'll see as the end. There's more of this word that's used. But we see specifically here seven reminders in sudden times, or as this word is used, sudden terror. Sudden times or sudden terror. These seven reminders. We see it begin in verse 19. I think it begins through the whole book, but here's where we're going to get to this topic through this chapter, verse 19. The Lord by wisdom founded the earth. By understanding he established the heavens. By his knowledge the depths were broken up and clouds dropped down the dew. Look at wisdom, understanding, knowledge. God's wisdom, understanding, and knowledge. And it's got to be in us. We see in verse 21, my son, let them, this them is what we just read in verses 19 through 20, wisdom, God's wisdom, his understanding, his knowledge, let them not depart from your eyes. Keep sound wisdom and discretion. What started me to think about this more as I was digging into this verse 25 is this word not, N-O-T. It's word appears here seven times, and each one gives some kind of instruction during these times, during any sudden times, things that come upon us quickly. We see the first one here that's used in verse 21, let them not depart from your eyes. This phrase, let not, so we'll see this word that's used. It's an adverb meaning surprise, no, not, or without. Some things that were specifically said, do not do or do not not do. Does that make sense? Do not not do? That doesn't sound right. Do or don't do. That's maybe more easy. So this one, it says, let not, specifically, let not wisdom, God's wisdom, depart. We see specifically, as it says in the end of verse 12, keep sound wisdom and discretion. To keep it. This word for keep means to guard, to keep, to observe, to preserve, to hide. Think about during sudden times, keep godly wisdom. Keep that understanding of what His Word shows, what we're to keep going back to. As we see through verse 21 through 24, it says again, my son, let them not depart from your eyes. Keep sound wisdom and discretion, so they will be life to your soul and grace to your neck. Then you will walk safely in your way, and your foot will not stumble. When you lie down, you will not be afraid. Yes, you will lie down, and your sleep will be sweet. Because you're looking to God's wisdom, and you look at, all right, I put my trust in Him and that understanding, that perfect wisdom, understanding, and knowledge. And so we think of, let not wisdom depart. This very first one that we see in verses 21 through 24. It's interesting, this word not will be used twice in a singular sense. And then after that, we'll see five of them that will be specifically something added to it, this word. This first one, again, the English translation, let not. You have the King James, this let not is the same word, just one word, not. Let them not depart. We see what we read in verse 25, do not be afraid of sudden terror. Again, this is that same word, not, that's used here. Not to be afraid. This word for be afraid, to be frightened. Not to be frightened by sudden terror, that's used here. Do not be afraid of sudden terror. Again, is what we see, how quickly these events have taken place in the past 3 months. I could say, oh, well, I could see how that would progress over time. But just, boom, it hits. It's like, whoa, what's the first thing? Well, fear can be there. It's like, let not fear take over. Don't let it be the governing factor in your life. Do not be afraid of sudden terror. This word sudden in the King James says sudden fear. It's kind of an interesting phrase. Don't be afraid of sudden fear. Don't let that fear encompass you. This word for sudden, other translations will use suddenly, unexpectedly. Fear that comes on unexpectedly. As I describe those at least two events, maybe God's preparing us for things that we may look back at and I joke about. We'll look back at a time and say, oh, I wish we were short of toilet paper. Now we're short of food in society. We see things, how quickly they transpired and how quickly and suddenly they took place. And this word sudden terror or sudden fear, this fear, dread, or terror. So you look at some of the things that even come close to our towns in the past week and a half. This understanding of not being afraid and that trouble will eventually come back on them. Verse 25, nor, let me read the whole thing again, do not be afraid of sudden terror, nor of trouble from the wicked when it comes. Last part of verse 25, especially as you look at the King James, this full meaning here, When the trouble or desolation falls back on the wicked, that it will be severe on them, and not to understand, all right, this is what will take place, and be careful. This trouble that will come upon the wicked, again, those curses that will take place. You reap what you sow. Again, the wicked's trouble, the desolation, their fall. Not be troubled, because it will come upon quickly as well. We think about this sudden terror as it's used here in verse 25. And where does the sudden terror come from? What happens? How does it get to that point? Turn back to Proverbs chapter 1 and keep a bookmark here. We'll be back and forth between chapter 3. Chapter 1 uses the same wording. Chapter 1 and verse 27. We see verse 27, when your terror comes like a storm, and your destruction comes from a whirl like a whirlwind, when distress and anguish come upon you. Well, how does this take place? We begin in verse 22. How long, you simple ones, will you love simplicity? For scorners delight in their scorning, and fools hate knowledge. You're not going to tell me truth. I know everything. I've searched it on Google. I know everything about things. Fools hate knowledge, godly knowledge. Verse 23, turn at my reproof. Surely I will pour out my spirit on you. Again, as you think of this discussion that's here, sometimes, well, this is God. Well, it's actually the personification of wisdom, this analogy as it goes through, because you see in verse 20, wisdom calls aloud outside. She raises her voice in the open squares. So we think of this understanding of wisdom speaking here, godly wisdom, of cling to godly wisdom. Turn at my reproof, verse 23 again. Surely I will pour out my spirit on you. God's Holy Spirit has always been available to those that would turn to it. God's always been there in their life. If they chose to follow that wisdom, we think, I will pour out my spirit on you. I will make my words known to you. Because I have called and you refused. I have stretched out my hand and no one regarded. Because you disdained all my counsel and would have none of my reproof. I also will laugh at your calamity. I will mock when your terror comes. When your terror comes like a storm and your destruction comes like a whirlwind, when distress and anguish come upon you. Again, where the terror comes like a storm suddenly, because they won't turn to godly wisdom. They mock at it and God's like, you think you have the answers? I'll step back and let you see how it works. You see as it continues, verse 28, then they will call on me. No mistake here, it is a little M. Again, this is referring back to verse 20. They will call on me, they'll call on wisdom, and God's wisdom. They'll call on me, but I will not answer. They will seek me diligently, but they will not find me. Sounds a little similar to Amos that we looked at a week or two ago, in that famine of hearing the word. They'll look, but they're not looking in the right directions. Verse 29, why? Because they hated knowledge and did not choose the fear of the Lord. The sudden terror that comes upon because of rejecting God's wisdom. This reminder is that first point that we already looked at. Let not wisdom depart. Keep on holding it. Keep digging into God's word. We think back to Proverbs 3, and I love how verse 25 and 26 go together. Do not be afraid of sudden terror, nor of troubles from the wicked when it comes. For the Lord will be your confidence and will keep your foot from being caught. Again, I think we've talked about this since Unleavened Bread, hopefully before. It's not by our might. It's God's might. It's His strength we look to. this word here in verse 26 of confidence. The Lord will be your confidence. Hear so much in this world of you've got to have self-confidence. You've got to think yourself something. Well, there can be some of that. But this understanding of God's to be our confidence, this confidence that's used here in the Hebrew means that in which one puts trust or confidence. Think of where we put our trust or confidence. Well, we see that confidence in God, realizing, all right, God, things come so quickly, you're like, God, I don't know where to go at this point. Keep us protected. We think of this confidence in looking to God, and he will keep your foot from being caught. Again, because we're looking to godly wisdom, we're trying to strive to live by his ways, and how important this is. This word for confidence that's used here in verse 26, turn over to Psalm chapter 78. This is one of those that you just, you dig into a verse and you just, it just kept growing, digging into this more, staying up later, working on it. It's like so much in this section. Psalm chapter 78, in verse 7, Psalm 78 in verse 7, whole section talking of God's kindness to a rebellious Israel going astray and them coming back. Psalm 78, verse 7, that they may set their hope in God and not forget the works of God and keep his commandments. This hope, word that's used here, is the same word for confidence, the same Hebrew word that we see back in Proverbs 3, 26. Hebrews talks about that plan of God being the anchor of our soul, that hope. Here we're reminded to set our hope in God, not to forget his ways, to keep his commandments. Again, God's wisdom. Turn back to Proverbs chapter 3, where we see these first two knots. These knots are mentioned throughout this chapter, and we'll wrap up with them. But it's interesting how these lead in to these last five. The last five still use this word knot, N-O-T, but specifically with what to do specifically. We see this first one, these last five again refer to this times of sudden terror. How do you behave? How do you treat others? Verse 27, do not withhold good from to those to whom it is due when it is in the power of your hand to do so. This is one of those where when you dig into the Hebrew word for it, the English translation doesn't really do it quite the justice, because what stood out in my mind when I was looking at my Bible, mine's the New King James, verse 25, 27, 28, 29, 30, 31, begins the verse with the same phrase, do not. It's okay, well, here's the do nots, but that's not what it's here. If you have the King James, again, not is there, but it's the phrase that's used in verse 27, it says, withhold not. There's another word that goes with this. The first two we looked at in verse 21 and 25 are just basically that Hebrew word not, and it tells you specifically not to fear, not to have these aspects with it. But here we see verse 27, the King James, withhold not good from those to whom it is due. And nothing wrong with this phrase, do not. But it's interesting how this phrase, withhold not. Each of these phrases that we'll use this word for withhold, not too difficult of a word, but this verb meaning to hold, to keep back. You think of specifically during sudden times, sudden terror. This is the time we hold back our supplies. We keep our stock hold and no one gets it. But what does it say? Do not withhold good from those to whom it is due when it is in the power of your hand to do so. Think of not to hold back, to be looking for ways to help, to serve, to be there for those in our community, neighbors, congregation. Think of this importance that's used here. Turn over to Proverbs chapter 11. This third of these statements is used. We're looking at here. Proverbs chapter 11, verse 26. Proverbs 11 and verse 26. The people will curse him who withholds grain, but blessing will be on the head of him who sells it. It's an interesting verse because sometimes we just got to give everything away. Not what it says. The people will curse him who withholds grain. Well, I've got grain to sell and I've got extra, but no one else is getting it because I might need it eventually, and if not, I still have it. You see what he does with it. But blessing will be on the head of him who sells it. Again, at a fair price, you're not trying to, I'm trying to chip them off, but you're trying to, all right, I'm not wanting to lose money on this. Here's how I can help. And there may be, well, this person, boy, they really need it and they don't have the money. I'm helping them out. This reminder here that goes through the curse is to those that withhold it. Won't look for ways to help others. Turn over to James chapter 4. This idea is throughout the scripture. James chapter 4. James 4, we'll begin in verse 13. Maybe verses that I thought more about. I was thinking about them more in February because something came up and I'm going to speak on this next Sabbath. And I was like, wait a second. I hope I'll speak on this next Sabbath, but it just depends. And I end up changing because there's times that topic will change. I can tell God was helping me work with something else. I'm like, all right. I'm not going to say, here's what I'm speaking on next Sabbath. I try to word it, well, I think I will, or possibly we'll see. Verse 13, come now you who say today or tomorrow, we will go to such and such a city. Spend a year there, buy and sell and make a profit. Whereas you do not know what will happen tomorrow. For what is your life? It is even a vapor that appears for a little time and then vanishes away. Here specifically talking of death, it can happen quickly. But also you think of, plans change. Where we have here's our projected plan for the month of June, but God willing. And I keep praying, God, your will be done. Is there something I'm missing? And am I being too apprehensive? Am I not being enough? God's will always be done. While those plans may change and we don't try to limit God, this is etched in stone. Well, not really. We never would have thought March 7th that, I'll see you next Sabbath, guaranteed. Well, again, sometimes you can't plan for those uncertainties at times. Verse 15, indeed, you ought to say, if the Lord wills, we shall live and do this or that. But now you boast in your arrogance. All such boasting is evil. Again, that phrase, I've seen people that sometimes it can be kind of a catchphrase. I've worked in Jordan for a year, and one of their phrases that was very irritating, I think I've mentioned it before, was inshallah. Their word inshallah meant God willing. And they would use it all the time. And I would coach sporting events. And so I'd have a student, I'll be there inshallah. And I'm like, no, don't tell me inshallah. Are you going to be here or not? Because it was just kind of, if I'm not there, something more important comes up. That was just God's will. No, your word should be your word. You try to do what you can. But maybe God, something could come up. This phrase that can be used, it's not a slogan or not a way to get out of things, but it's this understanding of God wills. But it's interesting in this section, then it comes to the, my favorite, therefores. So here's then, it brings us to the therefore. Verse 17, therefore, to him who knows to do good and does not do it, to him it is a sin. It's pretty strong. A sin. I remember this verse being used at college, and an acquaintance, I knew him on the track team, and he made a statement. He was working, we were near where we lived in our Booth City at college, and he was just working on someone's bike. And one of my friends said, "What are you doing?" He's like, "Well, I know how to fix this bike. I had a similar problem with this." And he's like, "But you don't even know this guy." "But I know how to fix it for him, and I've talked to him, and I wanted to fix it and make it right." And the verse that he quoted, well, I've got to do good if it's something I can help with, or it can be a sin. And I thought about it, I'm like, well, that's a great point. You think about that attitude, even during sudden times of terror, as we see back in Proverbs, to him who knows to do good and does not do it, to him it is a sin. To just have knowledge is dangerous. You have to do something with that knowledge, to do something to help what you can do. And you think of those simple things, you know, something's broken down in your neighborhood and talking, "Oh, I can fix this. Can I help? What's needed to be done?" You have a strength in an area to see, well, what can be done? How can you help in that area? This verse that again goes back to that meaning in Proverbs, to him who knows to do good and does not do it, to him it is a sin. You've got to put your actions into practice, to live it, to put it in there. Turn back to Galatians chapter 6. Galatians chapter 6. A verse we went through a whole sermon. I love this verse and I repeat it often around the house. Galatians 6 and verse 6, it begins, "Let him who is taught the word share in all good things with him who teaches. Do not be deceived. God is not mocked. For whatever a man sows, that he will also reap." Why, we already looked back in Proverbs 3:25, why the wicked, when they will come upon sudden terror and their fall will come quickly as well, they will reap what they sow. How we act, how we treat others, how we will reap what we sow. God's not mocked. It's not, well, it doesn't apply in this circumstance. It doesn't apply in tough times. It only applies in good times. It applies always. Verse 8, "For he who sows to his flesh will of the flesh reap corruption. But he who sows to the Spirit will of the Spirit reap everlasting life. And let us not grow weary while doing good." This warning that's here, it's don't grow weary while doing good. "For in due season you will reap if we do not lose heart." There's times you try to, "Oh, I'm trying to do the right thing," and then you maybe get blindsided by something else. "Well, that doesn't make sense. Aren't I supposed to be being blessed for this?" It will come. You just have to keep doing what's right. And again, to the therefore, verse 10, "Therefore, as we have opportunity, let us do good to all, especially to those who are of the household of faith." This opportunity to be looking doesn't mean you're just going into neighborhoods you don't know. It's, well, looking for opportunity in your area, in the congregation, as it says, especially of the household of faith. To think of, well, what can I do? What does so-and-so need? Are they still having a job? Do they need a little extra help? Looking for ways to help, to not withhold. As we think of this word, turn back to Proverbs. As we see again this third of these seven, verse 27, "Do not, or Do not withhold, or as the King James, withhold not good from those to whom it is due. Again, those that are trying to seek God's way, you're trying to help, see, ultimately to be caring for everyone. When, again, as it says, it is in the power of your hand to do so. One of those verses of looking for that opportunity, seeing, and usually it's the thought of praying about it. God, is there something that I can help with? What's needed? Where can I serve? I know a lot of times people will kind of look down, well, all I can do is pray. All you can do is pray? There's widows in the congregation that I'll call and say, well, I'm dealing with this. Can you specifically be praying about this? You can pray. You can ask for God, help us to see, is there something we're missing? Is there something we can help with? In the past, we've done something to help with those in the Northwest Indiana Food Bank. And right now, we're going to try to do it more individually and say, well, we've done it as a congregation. It should not stop, whether it's in your area, it's in your neighborhood. You know, someone may be in the neighborhood. Oh, they're out of a job. Well, maybe I can drop off a few cans of food to help out, or ask them, you need something. Maybe you're a carpenter and they need some work on the roof. Well, I can help repair part of that. I can help out with this. You're looking for ways to help. To not withhold good to those whom is due, when it is in the power of your hand to do so. Leads us to the fourth of these here into verse 28. Again, in my Bible, I'll say the do not say, but in the King James, I like how it's worded. Say not to your neighbor, go and come back, and tomorrow I will give it when you have it with you. These keep building on each other from verse 27 and 28 here. So we think of say not. Don't say go and come back when you have it with you. Can I borrow this? You have a cup of sugar I can borrow. I got lots of sugar, but I don't know if you really deserve it. You've been bugging me about this every week. Why didn't you get to the grocery store? You got it? Yes, I got a cup. What's needed? Again, don't say, or as it says, say not, go and come back. Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown says this about this verse 28. It says, promptly fulfill all obligations of both justice and charity. Promptly fulfill all obligations of both justice and charity. Do not put it off, as we think of in our standard. Do not put it off. If you have it, give it to help. It's an easy phrase because sometimes, well, maybe I'll need it later. Sometimes we joke, oh, the neighbor, they borrowed this, and I still haven't got it back. Well, have you asked? No, I don't want to bug them. Well, again, blessings are there. You think if someone's asking, you do what you can to help. Don't put it off. Turn over to Leviticus 19. That's why it's like, aren't we going to get into more important things when sudden terror? What do we do to stock the cupboards? What do we do to take care of ourselves? Each and every one of these takes care of ourselves. Takes care of a spirit mind of I'm looking out for others. I'm helping. So we think of Pentecost, the feast of first fruits. We're to be producing fruit. Leviticus 19, verse 13. This whole section, again, you can look at verse 2. The whole section deals with laws. Why? Verse 2, it says, speak to all the congregation of the children of Israel and say to them, you shall be holy, for I, the Lord your God, am holy. See the same statement used with clean and unclean meats? You think of this standard of God's ways of how are we helping? How are we serving? You see in verse 3, every one of you shall revere his father and mother and keep my Sabbaths, plural, weekly Sabbath, annual Sabbaths. I am the Lord your God. Starts to go through, not turning to idols, See, dropping down to verse 13, you shall not defraud your neighbor, nor rob him. The wages of him who is hired shall not remain with you all night until morning. Look at these as they both apply to each other, not holding back. Well, I'll pay him next week. Maybe I'll hang on to it. I'll make a little more interest off of it. If he's done work, you pay him. You don't withhold good. You give it to him. This importance, again, of how we treat our neighbors is throughout this whole Bible. See, dropping down or up to verse 11, you shall not steal, nor deal falsely, nor lie to one another. Steal, deal falsely. Again, how do you treat each other? How do we treat everyone? Dropping down to verse 17, you shall not hate your brother in your heart. You shall surely rebuke your neighbor and not bear sin because of him. There's times if the neighbor's done something wrong, you go, oh, that's all right. If it's severe, he's come through and done something to your fence, and hopefully there's a relationship where, oh, I didn't know that. Let's get it fixed. You bring, again, specifically talking to Israel, dealing with people of one mind. Think of in the congregation, we think of even as our neighbors in our neighborhood. Again, how we treat them. Verse 18, you shall not take vengeance nor bear any grudge against the children of your people, but you shall love your neighbor as yourself. I am the Lord. We see Christ quote this later in Matthew. It's not a New Testament principle. It's a Bible principle found in the Old and New Testament. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. It may be through time you get neighbors, oh, are they coming here again? What do they need this time? They never come to, oh, what can I do to help? And that's nice when you get a give and take. But, all right, well, what can I do? This, do you love your neighbor as yourself? This, again, principle throughout this entire Bible, we see it throughout Leviticus 19, because we're to be holy as God is holy, to have a different standard. Turn back to Matthew chapter 25. Or did not go through this whole section in Matthew 25, but it gets to this reminder here. The sheep and the goats are separated at Christ's return. What are we doing now? Matthew chapter 25 is the sheep are separated and they're told, I was hungry, I was thirsty. He goes through all these things. And they say, well, when did we see you this way? Verse 39, verse 40, and the king will answer and say to them, assuredly I say to you, inasmuch as you did it to one of the least of these, my brethren, his brethren, Christ's brethren, he's the head of the church, the Father placed him there. Inasmuch as you did it to one of the least of these, not all the ones that really have a lot of money, are you helping them out? Well, you can help out. But are you looking out for the least of those, the ones that are going through difficulties, troubles? If you did it to one of the least of these, my brethren, you did it to me. Think of caring for those brethren, ultimately all of our neighbors in our life, to think of how do we care for them? When we extend that, helping them when they're hungry, when they're thirsty, stranger, naked, sick, in prison, you go through that list, the list of they cared. They looked, well, maybe you need this. How can we help in this area? When we do those things, we are doing the same thing to Jesus Christ himself. Does it change our outlook? Do we think, well, it's what Christ would do for me. How do I do it to others? You see as well in chapter 22, I referenced it in Matthew here. What Christ quotes, I think we read it last week. Sermons are blending together sometimes. Matthew chapter 22, verse 37, when they're trying to find out what's the greatest commandment, Christ gives them the perfect answer. Jesus said to him, "You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. This is the first and great commandment. And the second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments hang all the law and the prophets." You start to look at every single law. We've been going through Deuteronomy, and you see these listed that we looked at in Leviticus. They all fall under one of these two categories. Really, all 10 commandments fall under loving God. They're His laws. They're perfect. And they show you how to love God with all your heart, mind, and soul. And how do you love your neighbor as yourself? Well, you know, I could lie to the guy. I don't have any sugar. Or, you need a hammer? I don't have a hammer you can borrow. Well, I meant it wasn't within my visual perimeter. I knew I'd never get it back from him. So is it the lie or is it, yeah, I may get shortchanged, but I may never see this again. But yeah, you need to borrow it. Here it is. You try to, again, love your neighbor as yourself. To put that neighbor in realizing, all right, how would I feel if I have to go up and ask? Well, I got to come back tomorrow or maybe next week. Oh, yeah, I got it right here. Sure. You think, wow, what a difference. Think of this attitude to not withhold, as we say, not to have them come back. Again, to love your neighbor as yourself. Turn back to Proverbs. Again, is this fourth lesson during sudden times of terror. And is, say not, go and come back. Especially when you have it with you. Now, there may be a reason. Oh, I don't have that right now. But you know, I'm going to go to the store later and I'll pick that up. And if you need a little extra, I'll pick it up for you as well. Don't tell them, come back later when you have it with you. Verse 29, we see the fifth of these. Do not devise evil against your neighbor. Coming back over and over to the neighbor. Again, as we looked at, I think, Mr. Martin a few weeks ago, going through, you shall love your neighbor as yourself, and who that neighbor, your brother, is. Ultimately, it's everyone. We're to be caring for everyone, looking out for each other. This phrase that's used here in verse 29, do not devise, or as the King James, devise not. This word devise, it's a verb meaning to plow. To engrave. It refers to devising or preparing evil against one's neighbor. You can put in your notes 1 Samuel 23, verse 9, where David mentions when David knew that Saul plotted evil against him. It's the same word. He devised evil, and David was trying to, all right, I've got to be circumspect. I've got to be careful because I know he's trying to do, ultimately, kill me. But he knew that Saul plotted evil. Saul continues to show how he wasn't following God. David was, well, let's just go kill this guy. See how he tries to flee and get out of there, to be wise. This attitude of devise, to prepare evil against one's neighbor, obviously is what we see. Don't devise evil. Don't go down that path. Do not devise evil against your neighbor, for he dwells by you for safety's sake. One of the toughest things that I've seen through the years is when a neighbor, you start falling apart. Maybe, oh boy, they really irritate me there. And boy, it was just, it's hard to mend the fences. They still have to be mended, but it can take longer. You go, oh boy. We had that with one of our neighbors. We were cutting down one of the branches hanging over. And I thought, why didn't I ask them about that? And I went out there and they were very, oh, we're sorry. No, I'm glad you did. Is there any other of our branches that are hanging over on your property? Like, we need to get them trimmed up and what else? And they were going, whoa, well, yeah. And they haven't had any since, but every year I try to go over and is there anything over? And I go on their property and look back on ours and we don't see this angle like you see ours. And so is there things that are encroaching on your space? What can we cut out? What can we help with? Trying to, again, keep those good relations and what needs to be done? not trying to, well, you know, boy, if I get this, I can encroach over their space and we'll kill these bushes. We hated them to begin with. You think, well, no, you're trying to, again, they're there for your safety's sake. And you think about how many times when you have good neighbors that you're going on a trip and, hey, can you keep an eye on the house? There should be no one coming into our driveway. We're heading off for a couple weeks and, oh, you know, I'll return the favor when you're gone. And it's just that helping each other. Yeah, oh, yeah, I'll keep an eye out. And sometimes, you know, the mailbox is overflowing or they forgot to turn off the newspaper. And so it's flowing over and you're like, oh, I'll pick it up so no one thinks you're gone. And again, being there for safety, security, to help each other out, building that relationship, not destroying it, as we see here. Neighbors, again, are to look out for each other, not to look for, boy, how can I get them out of my neighborhood? How can I get them? This looks like it may fall on their house. Well, good luck. I don't care. You think of ways to help. Again, what is used here and what we've already referenced of Matthew 22:39 that comes up over and over again. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. And we don't all have perfect neighbors. There's times where, oh boy, this one's a real doozy. And you try, oh, what can I do to help? What can I do? But never devising evil, trying to come up with some plot, trying to, again, remember to keep the peace. Do your part. Again, because that reference, they dwell there for safety's sake. They're a good security. Good neighbors are great. We can help each other out. Again, this premise specifically dealing with this time, what we see in verse 25, during times of sudden terror. To have those friendships, those neighbors that you can go to, and hey, boy, did you see this was coming down the road, keeping an eye out for each other, helping each other. Again, that importance. We see as it goes into verse 30, this sixth of these seven. Verse 30, do not strive with a man without cause. It tells you when you first read it, well, there can be a cause to strive against them. But do not strive with a man without cause, if he has done you no harm. This word strive not, as we see. This word for strive, Strong's number 7378. 7378, it's a verb meaning to contend, to dispute, to conduct a lawsuit, a legal case. Now again, it doesn't say you can never do it. It says if there's not a reason, you do everything you can to patch it up. And well, if they're just not going to make it right, then well, I'm going to have to take it to the judge, but I don't want to take it that far. Is there anything we can work out between us? This reminder, again, that it goes through this striving to conduct a lawsuit, to take it that far. Again, without cause. You do your part, you don't become the instigator. Turn over to Proverbs chapter 25. Occurs a lot through Proverbs, this reminder. Proverbs 25, verse 8. Proverbs 25 and verse 8. Do not go hastily to court, for what will you do in the end when your neighbor has put you to shame? Debate your case with your neighbor himself and do not disclose the secret to another, lest he who hears it expose your shame and your reputation be ruined. You can think, well, this guy's on my property line. I'm going to take him to court. And then you take him to court without even talking to the guy and you realize, oh, he wasn't on your property. You were on his here, here, and here. And now you get it to come back. It's like, whoa, I wish I would have just talked to the guy. This reminder of don't go speedily to court. You try to work it out together. Talk to each other. Go through it. This reminder of, again, not striving against the neighbor, but trying to work together. And again, there are reasons that, all right, he just won't listen, and I'm going to have to finally take it to that stage. But we do everything we can before that point. Proverbs chapter 26, It's just across the page in verse 17. Proverbs 26, verse 17. He who passes by and meddles in a quarrel not his own is like one who takes a dog by the ears. This is another one that I quote a lot. Sometimes I'll get, well, you know, you need to deal with this. I'm like, is that my quarrel? Because I think, all right, I'm not grabbing any dog by the ears. It's like, why am I making this quarrel mine? You get two neighbors and they're, well, will you side with me on this? And it's like, this is between you two guys. You guys deal with this. I'm not going to be grabbing the ears of the dog. And it doesn't end well for those people. You start getting into fights that aren't yours to begin with. But then you get drug in very quickly. The same word that's used here, this quarrel, this strife, is the same reading of this. Don't pass by, oh, I'm going to fix this. Well, is it your problem to fix? Again, not to get involved if there's not a cause. Turn over to Luke chapter 12. I often wonder if Christ had this verse specifically in mind when he says this. He knew the intent of the person asking, and it could have been a perfect intent. You think about if you're dealing with something in your family, can I get Christ involved to be a perfect judge in this matter? Boy, he would just be perfect at this. He could have actually meant it for good. Doesn't seem like it as we see here. But Christ doesn't, well, you know, you're right. I am a good judge. Let me get involved here. Luke chapter 12 and verse 13. Then one from the crowd said to him, "Teacher, tell my brother to divide the inheritance with me." There's no, well, let's have justice here. It's like, well, let's just tell him. Well, did he know all the facts? Verse 14. But he said to him, "Man, who made me a judge or an arbitrator over you?" And he said to them, "Take heed and beware of covetousness, for one's life does not consist in the abundance of the things he possesses." It's not about the money. It's not about what you get out of it. It's about, are you keeping the relationship there? I've seen families just destroy themselves. Oh, it's about this and this, and it all comes down to money instead of, well, is it worth giving up where you don't get everything, but you still have a mother or father in a relationship, or a brother or sister, or you have a relationship of, I don't care if I get gypped out of some of the money, I want to keep this relationship strong. And Christ, again, I love his, he's always perfect in how he answers, and just, who made me a judge or an arbitrator over you? It's not about the money, it's about the relationship. And as he goes into verse 16 through 21, the rich fool goes back to that proverb of the cursing of holding back the grain. Here he had all this abundance and he didn't think, well, how can this benefit others? How can I help? Boy, I still have storage where I've stored it, but now I got extra. How can I help the community? Now let me build more storage and this is all mine. This attitude, instead of looking out to say, what can I do to help? How can I help in this area? A lot, again, that comes up over and over about it. Turn back to Proverbs. Again, this strive not. Don't contend. We see here in verse 30. Do not strive with a man without cause. Again, the emphasis. There are times, there are causes. There's reasons you have to take it. Proverbs 3 and verse 30. Do not strive with a man without cause if he has done you no harm. And try to do everything you can to work it out, but there's times you have to go further, but to do everything you can in the situation. We see the seventh and final of these in verse 31. A lot of these kind of stem from this attitude of this seventh one. Do not envy the oppressor and choose none of his ways. So do not envy, or envy not, as the King James have it. This word for envy is a verb meaning to be jealous, to be envious. expresses a strong emotion in which the subject is desirous of some aspect or possession of the object. This is what I want. And as we see, this oppressor, don't envy the oppressor. Boy, they sure seem to be the rich ones. They're getting everything they want. They're getting the big screen TVs. They got all these things. This is a word for the oppressor. It's a noun meaning violence, wrong. It implies cruelty, damage, and injustice. Don't envy the oppressor, those doing the wrong, as it says here, and choose none of his ways. Again, the reminder back to the first point of we're to keep wisdom, godly wisdom, his ways. Don't, well, you know, these guys seem to be getting along great, and look what all they're gaining. But they'll fall just as quickly if they're not doing it God's way. Choose none of his ways. This word for choose, we'll be getting to it when we get back to Deuteronomy. Deuteronomy chapter 30, we'll turn over there. I love this word, and I don't want to dig into it too much because we'll be going into that. Maybe digging into it in a future sermon. Deuteronomy chapter 30. One of my favorite chapters, and we're right on it. We've just gone through the blessing and cursings, which has still been on my mind. How many times I've thought about the cursings in the past 3 months, people doing things like, boy, this sure lines up with the curses that are mentioned in Deuteronomy 28. Just think of, you don't have to choose that way. Choose the blessing. Deuteronomy 30, verse 19, I call heaven and earth as witnesses today against you, that I have set before you life and death, blessing and cursing. Therefore, choose life, that both you and your descendants may live, that you may love the Lord your God, that you may obey his voice, and that you may cling to him. For he is your life and the length of your days, and that you may dwell in the land which the Lord swore to your fathers, to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to give them. We think of those blessings that we have in this country that still stem back to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. We start feeling bad about those blessings. You start putting God in a spot of, well, why did you give us the blessings? Think of God's blessings to us and never forgetting. It says, therefore, choose life. It's that same word that's used for the oppressor. Don't envy the oppressor and choose none of his ways. You're already on a different path to be choosing life, God's ways. This word for choose, again, is a word, verb, meaning to have a keen look at, to prove, to choose. This is what I want. Especially as we've gone through Deuteronomy 28, and it gets almost painful reading some of those curses. You're like, oh, yes, choose life. God's like, don't choose that path. Hang on to God's laws. Keep following it. That reminder, again, of choosing. It's always a choice that God gives us. We have that choice. Turn back to Genesis. Genesis chapter 13, it's interesting when I started digging into this how two of these words kept popping up in this example and how it kind of begins and ends with this same thought. Genesis chapter 13, we see Abram and Lot again starting to grow very rich. Nothing wrong with riches. It's only if you don't think of others and you're just building it up for yourself. You think of verse 2, Abram was very rich in livestock, in silver and in gold. Think of this increase in how oftentimes it starts to create strife. You see, dropping down to verse 7, and there was strife between the herdsmen of Abram's livestock and the herdsmen of Lot's livestock. The Canaanites and the Perizzites then dwelt in the land. So Abram said to Lot, please let there be no strife between you and me, and between my herdsmen and your herdsmen, for we are brethren. We're family. This word for strife is the same one we looked at for the sixth principle, strive not. This is the noun. The other one was the verb. This controversy, contention. Think of this strife that Abram was, we can't have this. Yeah, so we got money. That shouldn't be a part of it. It should be, how are we treating each other? Think of this examples throughout what we've looked at in Proverbs, of this strife. And we see Lot doesn't make the best decisions. We went through this. It's funny. The girls still talk about this chapter. I think Megan does more than the others because she's the one. I went through this on a Sabbath school when we were back in Illinois, and you had Sabbath morning where we read through the story, and then I think it was pie or pudding. It was something I put out, and Emma was maybe two, so she probably was like, huh, Genesis, where? She was getting some of it, but Megan was more of the 4 to 5 year old of, what can pudding? And so I said, well, here's this bowl of pudding, and here's the principle. Who should get it? Oh, well, Emma, I think Emma should get it. And Emma, okay, and takes it, and Meg's like, wait a second. And so then I brought out a bigger bowl of pudding, and well, here's the blessings for doing what God showed. And I love this story. And you look at, don't let strife be there. And yet, hopefully it's one that kind of painted a picture. I forgot about it until the girls were talking about it a year or so ago. And but again, it's the biblical principle. What was Lot's thought? Oh no, what would you like, Abram? The promises were specifically to you first. He doesn't go there, oh, wow, this looks good. This pudding bowl is awesome. This is the one I want. It's huge. Wasn't the one to choose. We see as he goes through in verse 10, and Lot lifted his eyes and saw all the plain of Jordan, that it was well watered everywhere before the Lord destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, like the garden of the Lord, like the land of Egypt as you go toward Zoar. Then Lot chose for himself all the plain of Jordan, and Lot journeyed east, and they separated from each other. The word chose is the same one that we see not choosing any of his ways. I wonder if Lot ever went back to that decision and thought, I didn't make the right decision. I should have not picked the richest land because the richest land was also where the evil people, this is the richest land. You see what happened to Sodom and Gomorrah, the path they went down and how quickly he joined in their ranks. We look at this choice that he made. Abram, as you look at it, maybe got the shorter stick, the land that wasn't quite as fertile, not quite as good. But did God bless it and make it better? He didn't have to deal with all the evil of Sodom and Gomorrah. He had riches beyond what riches were. This attitude that was there, again, Abram brings it up of, we can't have strife here. Let's stop it. You choose. Lot chose, but it wasn't the choice of, I want him to have the best. I want him to have what he wants. It was instead off of his thoughts, his mind. It's interesting as Genesis 13 kind of sums up part of what we've been looking at here in Proverbs. And this reminder, to go back to Proverbs, Proverbs chapter 3 again, as it ends with this last one, but the rest of this chapter, from verse 31 through 35, keeps talking of these evil individuals. It says, do not envy the oppressor and choose none of his ways. Not even, well, one of them might work. Why, this one seems to work. No, you choose God's ways, every single one of them. Choose none of his ways. Why? Verse 32, for the perverse person, starts to expand more of this oppressor, and probably goes back up to verse 25 and starts to go through more of the wicked. Why these things suddenly come upon, what the fruits of them really are. For the perverse person is an abomination to the Lord. Well, they got some good in them. They're doing right here, there. No, we see this perverse person. In the Hebrew, it means to be crooked, to be devious. See, this crooked and devious person is an abomination to the Lord. It's another one of those I keep saying I'd like to go through this in a sermon. It's an astounding word to dig into, abomination. And to think of whatever God calls an abomination, do we call it that in our lives? This abomination, this is something disgusting to God, something he wants no part of. Is it something we want a part of? For the perverse person is an abomination to the Lord, but his secret counsel is with the upright. The other side, God counsels and works with those that are doing it right. Why? Because they're looking to his ways. And you keep digging into God's way, looking to his wisdom. Think of this secret counsel, this word that's used here, this confidentiality is at the heart of this term. That God says this secret counsel is with the upright, that he's there for them, helping them every step of the way. Verse 33, the curse of the Lord is on the house of the wicked, but he blesses the habitation of the just. Surely he scorns the scornful, but gives grace to the humble. It's coming back to the humility. It takes humility to go and I look to God's wisdom, not my own. He scorns the scornful and gives grace to the humble. The wise shall inherit glory, but shame shall be the legacy of the fools. Think of God's curses that again go back to the house of the wicked. Those that are not trying to live by God's ways. Those that aren't trying to strive for his truth. Those that are trying to do what they think's right in their own eyes. Here again, the wise, as we see, the upright, we see the righteous are the ones that are looking to God's ways. We think of this sudden terror and this application in this time. During times of sudden trouble, we see our instruction. Why are they righteous? Why are they upright and just? I began in verse 19, but it really begins in verse 1. Some of maybe your favorite verses that we skipped over to begin with. This word "not" appears 5 other times at the beginning of Proverbs. So we see where the end of it goes through. But why are the righteous righteous? Why are they upright? Why are they just? Verse 1, my son, do not forget my law, but let your heart keep my commands. For length of days and long life and peace they will add to you. Verse 1 is this first knot here. Don't forget my law. Keep my commandments. Keep my commands. We see very similar in Proverbs 4, verse 2. In the same knot that's used here as well, chapter 4, verse 2. For I give you good doctrine. Do not forsake my law. When you start to throw out God's law, you do not have anything to stand on. And that includes the religions of this world that say you don't need God's law. That's not what God's word shows. Do not forget my law. Keep God's ways. We see in verse 3, the second of these appearances here. Let not mercy and truth forsake you. If you're looking at God's law, it shows you what mercy and truth truly are. You're striving for mercy and truth in your life. We see in verse 5, trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. You're not forgetting God's laws and his commandments. Mercy and truth are what you're not forsaking. You're striving for God's way, applying God's law in your life. And you're not leaning on your own understanding. You're leaning on God's. You trust in the Lord with all of your heart. And this not leaning on your own understanding. Verse 6 leads up to the next one in verse 7. It's hard to separate verse 5 and 6. In all your ways acknowledge him, and he shall direct your paths. Do not be wise in your own eyes. In this fourth time of verse 7, do not be wise in your own eyes. Fear the Lord and depart from evil. We don't have the wisdom. We turn to God for that wisdom. We see is that last one here in verse 11. My son, do not despise the chastening of the Lord. Start looking at God's law, not forgetting it, not letting mercy and truth falter in our lives, trusting in God, not leaning on our own understanding, not being wise in our own eyes, and we will make mistakes at times. Sometimes those are the times we realize, ah, here's God's law, and here's where I thought I knew better, and God will chasten us. He'll correct us, and I'm seeing a curse in my life because I did this. I've got to repent, and I want to get back to the blessings, to follow God. Do not, as it again says in verse 11, do not despise the chastening or the correction of the Lord, nor detest his correction. It's there out of love, as it shows. For whom the Lord loves, he corrects, just as a father the son in whom he delights. Do not despise that chastening. It will take place when we go astray, that God, hey, got to get back to here, choose life. Oh, that's right. And that importance, again, that's here. These not statements from verses 1, 3, 5, 7, and 11 show why the righteous are righteous, why they're upright and just. They're following God's ways. They're practicing his ways by showing mercy and truth. They're not leaning on their own understanding. They're not wise in their own eyes. They know it's not by their might or their wisdom. And when that correction comes from God, it's, oh, thank you for showing me. Help me to get back on the right path, to repent from those sins. And as we see at the end of this chapter again, we read in verse 35, where the whole chapter again goes together, the wise shall inherit glory, but shame shall be the legacy of fools. Shame. It will be their legacy. We've got to keep looking to God's ways. We look at what that ultimate seventh trump, that changing at the twinkling of an eye, what that inheritance will be. We're striving to follow God's ways now. We're seeking first God's kingdom and his righteousness. We think of this importance, again, of practicing it, putting it into place in our life, loving it. Turn finally over to 2 Thessalonians. 2 Thessalonians. This chapter that talks of this great apostasy, I think it's occurred at different times over the past 40, 50 years. The mid-90s was a big one. I think it will occur maybe to a fuller sense. It seems to occur right before end-time events, possibly. 2 Thessalonians 2, verse 1. Now, brethren, concerning the coming of our Lord Jesus Christ and our gathering together with him, we ask you not to be soon shaken in mind or troubled, either by spirit or by word or by letter, as if it was from us, as though the day of Christ had come. This phrase that's used in verse 2, not to be soon shaken in mind or troubled, is the idea of something coming quickly. Something happening. Wow, boy, that just really hit me out of nowhere. How did that come about? What we see as he's talking ultimately of this deception, either by spirit or by word or by letter. Doesn't mean they were from a true source. They're pointing to God. Verse 3, let no one despise you by any means. Sorry, let no one deceive you. Don't let them despise you, maybe other places. Let no one deceive you by any means. For that day will not come unless the falling away comes first. And the man of sin is revealed, the son of perdition, who opposes and exalts himself above all that is called God or that is worshiped, so that he sits as God in the temple of God, showing himself that he is God. This hasn't fully happened, at least from what I can see. Think of someone, again, not too hard to think about, who is can call themselves God and be in the place of God. We think of these deceptions. Let no one deceive you by any means. How do you get to that point to not let anyone deceive you? It's a lot through this section, dropping down to verse 9. The coming of the lawless one is according to the working of Satan, with all power, signs, and lying wonders, and with all unrighteous deception among those who perish. Because, here's why the deceptions can take place, because they did not receive the love of the truth, that they might be saved. And for this reason, God will send them strong delusion, that they should believe the lie, that they all may be condemned who do not believe the truth, but have pleasure in unrighteousness. This section, verses 1 through 12, has a lot of tie-in to Proverbs. So we think about that section of those troubling times, times that will be worse ahead, times that will be quick to, all right, well, what do we do? The same principles that we looked at in Proverbs, of those still caring for our neighbor. Think of difficult times that come. Well, you know, that's the time you cut off the neighbors. That's, you store your supplies. You tell them good riddance. Start to think about, you got to keep godly wisdom there. You got to keep following his ways, striving, not withholding from anyone, to help where you can, not to tell them to go back and come back another day when you have it with you, not devising plans of evil, not striving against them, and not having envy. Again, striving to follow God's ways always in our life. Putting it on, living it with every part of our being. This reminder that comes back to that love of the truth. Is it something that's still there? I got to dig into more of it. Or is it, I know it. I know God's plan. I have most of it under control. I know enough that I'm not going to be deceived. Or is there still that love for God's ways? The righteous, the upright, and the just are those that continue to strive to follow God, that still have that love of the truth, that are digging into it, learning from it every day in their life. Are we preparing for the times ahead? God is preparing us to be ready for those sudden times, as Proverbs says, those times of terror that can come quickly. We have seen events happen very quickly in recent times. Are we close to God? Do we have love for God's truth, his wisdom, his law? These times shouldn't make us fearful, but they should draw us closer to God. Be prepared during these sudden times.